It always takes a minute or so for the red light. There we go. All right. Thank you all for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to Rick Michaelman, who will be speaking with us this hour. Rick is President and CEO of Michaelman. So this interview is an element of IRI's new sustainability community. The sustainability community provides resources and networking opportunities for members as you promote sustainability in your innovation practices. So as the community grows, you will be able to access facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics. Our first one's going to be tomorrow, and you should all have an invitation. If you don't, let me know, and I'll send that through to you. We'll have case studies and white papers with industry examples. We should have one coming out very soon. It's going through the comms department, so it'll take a while, but we're working on it. We also do updates and insights with additional resources and interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. These will always take place on the fourth Thursday of the month at noon Eastern. And I'll be sure to sign all of you up for updates to the sustainability community. And if you don't want them, please let me know. We don't want to give you emails that you don't want. Just a few housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation with Rick. So first, this session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there won't be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. And we've got quite a few people here, so we're just going to have questions in the chat just because it's a lot easier to manage. So please feel free to put them in the chat and I'll ask them at the end. Okay, all that's out of the way. Rick, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Brett, you're welcome. Thank you, Lee. And just quick introductory comment for me as well. Not only am I a fan of Lee Green, but I'm a big fan of IRI. And just, quick comments, then we can kind of dive into the meat of things. IRI has been a great organization for Michaelman. I wish I discovered it earlier in my career because it would have helped me early on. But there's been so much there. So I would encourage everyone who is not currently a member, or if you are, take advantage of the training, take advantage of the networking. The networking is amazing. You get to meet such interesting people through IRI, and tell a friend. And I always think about, if you're in a big company and there are people in other divisions of your company who might not know about IRI, let them know and get them involved. And certainly, even people who are not in the R&D field, the HR people or IT people, can take advantage of the networks and so much else. So just, I'm a big fan. I wanted to throw in a free advertisement, then you can ask me anything you want.
Oh, Rick, this is why we love Rick Michaelman. Thanks so much. So, and yeah, if anyone has any questions about IRI activities or anything, please just let me know. I'm happy to help in any way. All right. So enough IRI love for now. So tell us about your background and about Michaelman, Rick.
Okay, thanks. So what I like to tell everyone, because it's kind of a cute start, that I've been with Michaelman for either 57 years or 27 years. And I say that because we're a privately held business. My grandfather started the company, and you're kind of born into it. It's a little bit like the movie The Firm, but a little bit more pleasant. And just, I've been back working with the company for 27 years. My first job as a kid, even here, we're doing things like mowing the grass or assembling brochures for us. And I kind of got to know the company very early on as a kid. And, we'd sit around the company, the table at dinner at night and say, what are things made of? So we got a little bit of geek in us, but a lot of fun. And when I came, when I graduated from grad school, I went and got a PhD. I worked for a company called Raychem, which is now owned by Tyco, out in California for a few years, and then came back to Michaelman. And I started in our laboratories here making emulsions. That's what we do. We're a chemical company. Turn that into coatings, which are used in so many different applications that I'll mention because it really relates to sustainability. Found myself moving into management. It was the right thing to do. And then I made a big jump, and that jump took me into the marketing field, particularly what I call pull-through marketing, getting to know brands, consumers, customers, to ask them in a business-to-business format, how are our products used and how can we be better at what we do? And that leaving of R&D, still staying connected to R&D, but leaving R&D for a few years gave me some really unique insights that I think helped me a lot later. That let me get into business leadership, whether that's running some of our platforms or growth segments like printing and packaging or composites, but also getting regional management and regional leadership. So I spent some time running our Asia units and then also running Americas here. So commercial parts as well. And today, to close out kind of my journey personally, I've been our chief executive officer for the past year, That on its own has been a big learning. And in order to do that, I've had to give up a lot of R&D responsibilities day to day. And, you know, we're making some big steps there too. My final thing that I'll say about Michelman, for those of you who don't know who we are a specialty chemical manufacturer. We specialize in surface modifiers, so changing the surface of things. I love to say to non-scientists, we make things sticky, not sticky, or water resistant. A little bit simplistic, but kind of gets to the point, making things sticky or not sticky or water resistant. And we do that with our purpose statement of innovating a sustainable future. So that innovation, sustainability, and future, I'll talk about that in 2 or 3 minutes, I'm sure. But the themes that you might think about are, we help make cars lighter and planes lighter. We improve the performance of wooden decks. Think about, you know, water resistance, water beading. We make grease and oil resistance or moisture resistance for takeout food containers through the chemistry. We don't make the containers. We just put the surface treatments on and teach people how to do that. Lots of things you'd see every day. Great graphics for digital printing. We just enable so many of these things by making chemistry that goes on the surface that others can use. A lot of information, but stay with that sticky, not sticky, and water resistant to keep life simple.
I love that. That helps. So how is sustainability integrated into the mission and purpose of what you're doing at Michelman?
Well, let's go back to that purpose statement, innovating a sustainable future. And if you unpack that a little bit, you've got innovation, which means we're willing to do hard work, difficult things, break through preconceived notions that people might have to make radical change in industry. We're all in for that. We enjoy that. That's fun for us. And we get a lot of enthusiasm when we do it right in our key areas. So that's innovation. Sustainability is a big piece, and that works into it. So we have to be thinking about that in everything we choose to do every day. So when, whether it's new product development or who we sell to or that industry we choose to serve, what's the innovation or what's the sustainability play in that industry? A lot of what we do is water-based chemistry. It's a huge driver versus solvent-based chemistry, but there's so much more to the sustainability. It's how we operate and what we produce. And then future, being privately held, we want to remain privately held. So we work that in as well. Are we doing things that are going to protect the planet and give us a business that will be around, the sustainability piece, for a long time, thus the future? So all of that builds in. When we layer on top of that what we call an evergreen vision, we want to be around for a long time and continue to, like an evergreen tree, bloom and flourish and be successful. We have to have a long-term focus, people first, privately held, pragmatic innovation, and growth-oriented. Sustainability works into that for all of us. If we are making the world a better place, we're protecting people and making sure our workers and our customers and our brands that buy from us are safe, sustainability really goes into that. So it goes all the way through, and it even gets into our strategy, which involves innovation and sustainability, of course, and customer intimacy, understanding supply chains, understanding where things go and end up, and making sure we're building products that will enable health and wellness and success for many, many, many years. And that gets into the detail, of course. The last comment I'll make here is making sure that what we put in our products every day is safe for people, and removing anything that could be judged a substance of concern. So we want to get all that out, and including, back to the same theme, water-based chemistry, making sure we're not using bulk organic compounds or other things that can cause damage to the atmosphere. So lots of things there, but sustainability works into a lot of that every single day, including our purpose.
Mm-hmm. So how have your sustainability efforts evolved over time? Because obviously you've been with Michelman a while now.
Yeah. Well, my grandfather started our company, and, you know, I wish I could tell you that he cared a lot about sustainability and he knew about it in, you know, whatever, 1949. But that's probably not true. You know, what we found over many years, either through my grandfather's efforts or more particularly my uncle's and my father's efforts, who ran the company together for many, many years, that you could do a lot with water-based chemistry and environmentally friendly chemistry. So that while that wasn't the initial thrust, they started a business that, you know, did bookbinding chemistry and gold refining. They discovered through the use of water-based chemistry, you could do a lot. In fact, you could do a lot of things that more damaging chemistries could do, but you could do it in a better way that didn't hurt people, didn't hurt the environment, we were able to create jobs and eventually create jobs all around the world through what we do. That was a big step forward and a realization that we could do this. And as my cousin ran the business, and, you know, I've been involved for many, many years, my cousin Laura ran the business and I've been involved for many years, we've been able to leverage this. And we've now been at this for almost 75 years. And we realize that we have both a right, and this is part of the evolution, we have a right to do this, and we have a responsibility to do this. So the pressure is now on us to think about how do we do this effectively and use new information about carbon footprinting and what we do all in our business every day to make a better planet and to be successful and hire people to help leverage the successes we've had. So for that, we've had to do things like realign our business and think about how we restructure and how we put people in positions to be successful. So for us today, you know, we have a newer role, Director of Global Sustainability, Chuck Hardy, who's been deeply involved in IRI and various components for years. And, you know, he gets to the meetings and does this, now has this role where Chuck's job is to help make sure that we're moving through the channels appropriately and we're more effective than we've ever been. So again, back to your question on evolution, we've tried to put people in place that help manage us as we move forward. And so we have both high-level thinking and on-the-ground execution every day. The last thing I think is worth bringing in here is this fact that we have to be more proactive. Instead of waiting for someone to call and say, hey, can you help us with the sustainability piece? We're in a position now to begin to say, how can we build products and how can we build solutions and how can we teach industries how to do things with sustainability that lets them grow their business without the burden of additional cost or effort? Sometimes that'll come in, but the proactivity is the key.
So kind of diving a little deeper, can we talk about integrating sustainability and new product development processes? Because, you know, let's geek out a little bit for all of our chemists here.
Yeah. Well, and I think this appeals to everyone. So what we've done is we've divided into kind of two different pathways, both run side by side, and all of them relate to new product development. They have to. So we work in, as we talk about it, we talk about our planet positive footprint. So that's what do we do in our factories and our facilities and our sites? You know, that could be, well, that's just, I'll leave it there for a second. And then part two is planet positive products and solutions. What are we creating and how is that used in the world? So if we think about the planet positive footprints, that could be any, that's just such a huge space of things we can do. Can we minimize our energy use? Can we minimize our solid waste? Can we minimize the amount of water we use? Energy, water, and solid waste in what we do every day. And a lot of that's under our control. So we can use modern techniques, automation, huge investment on our end is a wastewater treatment plant that we're going to be able to use so that all of our operational water can be reused in either our products or other parts of our business. But those are what we call planet positive footprint items, our factories and our sites. And by the way, that gets into other things as well, like recycling our packaging waste. That gets into things like automated lighting. So if my lighting changes, it's because I'm not moving around enough and, you know, things like that. So when people aren't in rooms, the light's not used. All these things we can do in our facilities. That's planet positive footprint. And when we think about product design, we can design to think about minimal water use, minimal energy utilization, and minimal solid waste creation. So we ask our scientists to think about that in the design of new products. On the planet positive products and solutions side, that's incredibly interesting as well, but sometimes harder to measure, which I know, again, we'll get to that later. But we think about two things we can do on that, on the products and solutions side. We can zero out chemistries that are not favored. And, you know, we like to think we've made good selections from the beginning, but every time we develop a new product, the question should be, how can we use the best chemistries available that are best for the environment and best for people and best for our business, particularly our customers and other stakeholders? So we're trying to zero out chemistry that's less favorable, invest more heavily in chemistries that are more positive. Part two, other than zeroing out, is doubling down on industries. So what are those industries that we want to double down in where we think we can make a big difference? So for us, industries like that are places where there's fall to organic compound reduction, so switches from solvent-based to water-based chemistry. We always want to make sure we're using water-based wherever we can, and that's darn near everywhere in our business. Lightweighting of materials. Think about lightweighting of cars or airplanes or appliances or even packaging. And then deep emphasis on the circular economy. So think about recyclable packaging or digital printing, or, you know, print only what you need. So the thought process on new product development is, are we investing our time and our R&D in these industries where they're financially sound and good for Michelman? But really importantly, they have a positive impact, again, on people and planet. So we try to build it in late. And I think that's the catch is weight energy and weight labor towards those areas and make sure you're really fully investing in those.
All right. So the next step on that is, you know, how do you measure this? You know, what are the metrics that you're using on your sustainability efforts?
So we work with a triple bottom line. ESG is very common. Our version of ESG, E, environmental, S, societal, and G, governmental, is we go with people, planet, and profit through the triple bottom line. So, you know, the three Ps, people, planet, and profit. And we can measure each one of these. And it's nice because we can measure internally for leadership. We share it with all of our employees quarterly. We have a report on people, planet, and profit. So we're very open about it. And of course, this goes to our board as well. We have an external board, even though we're privately held. They're wonderful people, you know, work for big companies in the past or currently. They're awesome. And they'll test us against that. So we have to do a pretty good job at measurement and communication. So if we think about people, we think about some key themes like retention, engagement, internal promotions, diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is something I know IRI has gotten involved with more and more. And certainly safety. Safety is a big deal. And we have to, as a chemical company, we have to be very on top of safety. So all of those are on the people side, what we report against. And there, again, there's a sustainability component to that. Item two is planet, and often planet's where we talk mostly, you know, about a lot about sustainability. And that's where you hear about things that I talked about in kind of the previous question, which is zeroing out certain chemistries, doubling down on others, this whole investment of planet positive footprint and planet positive products and solutions. So we can measure ourselves against a few of those. When it comes to things like, you know, the wastewater treatment plant, we can easily measure, about our water utilization and how that changes, how much we pull from, you know, the city in any city that we operate, be it Singapore, Belgium, or here in Cincinnati. Lots of options there for measurement. Energy and solid waste, we can measure those pretty effectively as well. How does our energy change based on what percentage is renewable? So there are lots of measurements there that we can report on. When you get into the zeroing out piece, which is removing chemistries, we can look at the number of products we create that are on positive chemistries versus things that we're switching out. We can measure the changes we make there. The hardest piece is to measure our impact on the world, those industries where we're doubling down. So if our material is used to coat paper, we can certainly talk about the change or the chemistry that we use and do carbon footprint work, which is, you know, we want to make sure that's standardized. It's an industry concern, but we can talk about that, what we do ourselves. What we want to be able to understand is the multiplicative effect. So if a thin film of a Michelin coating goes onto a piece of paper that goes into food service containers for a takeout tray at a restaurant, our impact is bigger because even though we're a smaller part of it, we're the enabling part of that. And what we don't know how to measure too actively now is what's our bigger impact on the world because we're enabling folks to move from a plastic lining to a paper material that's fully recyclable. And so the impact there is much bigger than any pound or kilogram or ton that we produce. And that's where, you know, we want to have better ways of measuring it. We take great pride when we tell stories about that, moving from a water-based, moving into a water-based deck stain from a solvent-based deck stain. There's really good stuff there, but we're a small component of that deck stain or that deck. So lots of work to do there. And we always want to make sure that we're not greenwashing. We're really cautious about what we say. So we want to measure, but we don't want to overstate what we do because someone will call us out on that. And that's not the company we want to be. We think this is all viable. The last thing I'll say here is that it's really important to get external validation. So we focused on the EcoVadis company. There are others out there. They're very well respected in our industry, in the chemical industry. And we think they do a good job of being non-biased about how companies are doing with sustainability. And for us in particular, we'll look to places like the Biodegradable Products Institute, BPI, that'll tell us if treated articles, you know, plates, whatever it would be, you know, paper cups, pass testing protocols for that. And that's another third-party validation and a good piece for measurement. So some internal stuff, Lee, some external stuff, and trying to avoid greenwashing at all costs. We want to be legit about what we do. Mm.
So you touched on how you reported on these metrics to staff. How about to, you know, the board that you mentioned, your customers, suppliers? How do you report all of that, you know, slightly more externally?
I think that most of what I'm talking about, you know, isn't really proprietary. We can talk about it. We're not going to reveal ingredients in particular. you know, I think a key on the outside is to use common terminology. And I think that's still a little bit of a struggle in parts of the industry yet. There, you know, there are lots of reports on carbon footprint work. You know, we know there are multiple ways of doing calculations, and we hope that gets standardized because we want to be ready for that and make sure that we're operating at that level. What I find that we have to do on the outside is to make sure that we're talking the language of the industries in which we operate. So looking for commonality, using that phraseology, and making sure that if a customer says to us or makes a request of us, we're putting the data in a format that's useful for them. That can get to be very complex. So we look forward to a world where things are standardized and more useful. And I think what's nice about our board, as we talk about that, is that they're used to coming from different industries and they've seen this themselves, so they can give us some coaching. And as your sustainability, you know, conversations go on, Lee, within IRI, I think that's a wonderful place with with scientifically minded people to think about standardization and communication. Mm-hmm. Great. And in the midst of that, there are all kinds of governments. And, you know, again, I'm sure we're moving our direction towards a conversation on regulation, how the regulatory authorities set things in place and how do we respond to that in a way that's useful information and avoids misstatement.
Hmm. Let's just roll right into it. How do you deal with all the regulations and the shifting environment there?
So one of the other catchphrases that I used to use at Michael and quite frequently, and I still believe it's helpful, is that we win when regulations change. And because we're moving in the right direction, because we've had positive momentum here for a very long time, I think we're in a good place to be that proactive company that I talked about before. So I'll give you a couple examples, and we'll move around the world because our business is global. If you think to India, India seems far away from the United States, but a huge, huge country who is about to have more people than any other country in the world, they put in place something that they call the plastic waste management system and regulations. And they said this, very much related to many things, but food packaging in particular, you can't package in certain ways when you're moving food around. You can't have single use materials and the like. And they released that. And because Michaelman was already very strong on using paper-based materials, putting treatments on them that left the material recyclable, we are in a really good position to help the Indian economy make that transition. You know, different parts of it made it in different ways. We were able to do a lot in snack foods and the like. So very, very positive things there. And we were able to benefit, and the Indian economy was able to benefit. And sustainability took a step forward in India because of the efforts that we all put forth. The brands were in, the converters were in, we were there to help them. We had a presence on the ground. We've got wonderful people there. We're able to teach and train. So that's a case that I think it worked very well, because we were ready, we were proactive, we knew the converters, we had friends, and we had a government that wanted to make this happen. So that's one, I think, on the good side. A challenge, and that has happened many places around the world, very positive, can't complain. China has made decisions about paper cups, for takeout. They want those also to be recyclable. We've made differences there. We've been able to make a difference replacing metal with, composite material, and that's really well respected in the automotive industry all around. Lots of positives, and sometimes regulation related. If you want to eliminate emissions from automobiles, you make them lighter, you switch them to electric, you still want to get plenty of miles per gallon or miles per miles per charge or kilometers per charge. So making car lighter is good. We help with that. So there, emissions regulations have changed. Way, way down the industry, we've been able to make a difference. That's been positive. A catch new is that as speed picks up and changes in regulations, you have to make sure, we all have to make sure, that regulations are thought through. Of course, that's kind of obvious. But sometimes when the legislators or the writers miss definitions or they don't get things spell out the right way, you pass chances to be sustainable or to move along the sustainability journey because you take too big a step forward. An example of that might be in Europe now, which a wonderful piece of designed legislation, similar to the India piece, in Europe they call it the Single-Use Plastics Directive. They coded some terms that probably skipped over viable technologies, and so they knocked out some science that had a good goal for the whole policy, but they slowed themselves down a little bit. So that might be one where if we'd had more access there and we'd been more proactive with legislators, we might have been able to help them more effectively. So I think the good news is we can all do well when regulations change if it's managed appropriately and we can take people along. So I'm optimistic. I think this can occur. Not all regulations are bad, but it has to be thoughtful.
So are you working, how are you empowering your associates in your organization to contribute to that legislation and regulations?
So it has to occur on a local level because that's where the laws are made. So we have to be present in those areas. And I think, we're a solid medium-sized company. We're not, we don't have massive armies of lobbyists like some other folks on the phone might have. Therefore, we have to do a lot of work through either A, partners in the industry, for example, our customers, who we can enable and help them know the answers and stories to tell that they figure out for themselves and we can contribute. But also trade organizations are really important. So, big orgs, whether it's things like the National Association of Manufacturers, of which IRI is a part, they have a lobbying arm and they have a loud voice. They can make a difference. But also industry-specific orgs, whether it's something for the automotive industry or something for the printing industry, these folks have a voice as well, and we need their help to amplify our thought process along with their thought process to make this important. So I think that's a piece, but a lot of it has to occur on the local level. So what we tell our teams are get to know your local legislators, think about who they are because they can be a voice for you. And if done right, they might be able to create some clear pathways to give you a competitive advantage. So you have to think about it through, but it's not always easy. There are lots of moving parts and you have to be aware of it. We have a regulatory team ourselves that thinks about food contact compliance and chemical inventories of what countries you can sell into and not sell into. They've already put in place early warning signs so that we're already looking far ahead and saying, how can we get our voice heard early and help people into positive solutions?
Excellent. So shifting gears slightly, just thinking about return on investments in sustainability, we know they're really hard to assess. So what's your calculus there, Michaelman?
Yeah, well, so if you split it, everything can be split into two parts, right? You've got your leading and lagging indicators. Lagging indicators are something that, are always out there, and we tend to think about them a lot. And you can think of, the easy ones are, how much sales are you getting from a new line of business that you put in place? So when we think about the platforms that we're really excited about, one is circular economy packaging. We've been involved with it for a long period of time. And you can go look about how much we're selling into that space for providing water resistance or grease and oil resistance for food service, corrugated boxes, so many different areas in this space that we're very excited about. Flexible packaging and heat seal, where we play a role there. There's a huge amount of energy that goes into that, whether it's plastic to paper conversions or movement from multi-layer structures to monolayer structures that can be recycled. We can measure our sales in those spaces. That's a lagging indicator that helps us understand where we've been. And then, of course, we layer into that how much labor and energy did we put into it, not just on the R&D side, but also on the selling and marketing side to make sure we're winning there and doing the right things. We're trying to build more of the leading pieces into it. So in our stage gate process, we're asking people to check a box or make a mark so that we can track how much of our energy is going into these sustainability initiatives. They have to be able to defend it, but we do that with both our stage gate process and moving more and more into our sales opportunities. It might be an existing product, but where are we spending our energy as a company? And those might be viewed as things that are leading indicators that we can measure to say, what percent of our labor or what percent of our thought process or our opportunities deal with sustainable solutions? A key for us is to do this with partners as well. So if we make a water-based chemistry that can go onto a surface for print receptivity, we also want to track what our customers and co-promoters are doing, people who might sell equipment into the same space, so we can see how we're doing together. And that's another way of tracking what we're doing. If digital printing is growing rapidly and we can measure the number of pages of digital print that are going out in a print when ready environment, and we can measure our kilograms or pounds of products sold, we can see how we're doing. And that's another way of measuring how we're doing versus others in the industry.
Okay, so have your efforts impacted your relationships with your customers and suppliers? You touched on it a little bit earlier, but let's dive a little deeper.
Yeah, well, I'll go back to that language before that I think for years we've been fortunate or thoughtful and that we positioned ourselves to be enablers in this space. So, I think good for us is that the telephone keeps, you know, telephone, emails, you know, it could be fax from a number of years ago, whatever, you know, all the systems keep ringing, you know, in a positive way. And, you know, with our global environment, particularly being in places like China, where WeChat is kind of a common theme, or WhatsApp is used, and whether it's India or Europe or all around the world, requests come into Michaelman. And, you know, while we do a reasonable amount of promoting to talk about this and try to get our word out there, you know, we're going to bring it up in every customer meeting anyway, and a lot of supplier meetings. I'll comment on suppliers in a second. People know that we do this because we've not, you know, we haven't really branded ourselves as the sustainable people, but we do talk about that purpose to innovate a sustainable future. So if you're coming to us and you're asking us to do work for you, that might be a wonderful thing for a wood deck that's solvent-based chemistry. We probably could, but we're probably going to try to direct you towards a water-based chemistry. So the conversations that we're having with people are about how to move to more environmental sustainable solutions. And we've even, you know, we've talked about sustainability. It's been through our website for a while, but really importantly, now we've created a new sustainability landing page. So if you're interested, please do go to www.michaelman.com/sustainability. You can find it. Michaelman's M-I-C-H-E-L-M-A-N. So you can find it out there and see what we're doing, right? That's a beginning for us to have an actual landing page that gets to it. So it's another way for people to find us that we're looking to. The key for us is because of that customer intimacy we believe in, that conversation with every customer that comes through the door and every supplier that comes through the door to talk about sustainability is really part of the magic. So I think what we have to do, and what I'm encouraging us to even do now, not just alert suppliers that we need sustainable materials or talk to us about sustainability, we have to be really careful about how we and thoughtful about mapping the Michaelman solutions into customer sustainability goals. So what I want our teams to do is read the sustainability goals of our customers, come back and say, can we help them with any of these? The answer for some of them might be no, but take somebody who wants to use less water in their process. How might we help them do that? Take somebody who wants to create less solid waste. How might we help them do that? Take somebody who wants to have packaging in part of their business that can be recycled and reused or even composted. How might we be able to help them to do that? For every example I just gave you, we can. We can. And a big part of sustainability is lesser consumption. So if we can have chemistry that's more efficient, so you need less to accomplish a goal, then I think we're doing that. So the key is to begin this mapping. And I think that's where some of the future magic is going to lie around this whole theme of conversation with customers and suppliers. So that when they come to talk to us, they say, hey, we know that you've done this, or we know that you've done this with others. How can you help us do the same thing? Or this is the goal. Do you have anything that can get us there?
All right. So we're going to open the floor to questions, but I have one last question. You touched on it a little bit. You teed me up nicely. So looking to the future, you know, how do you want to see your efforts evolve over time? You know, I won't put a specific time frame on it, but, you know, where do you see this going?
Well, two things. So, you know, well, no, I'll start with two, and then I think it'll break out a little bit more from there. I'll go back to that purpose statement again, because, you know, messaging that I'm sure you've all heard, if you're purpose driven, it's got to be top of mind. You got to live it every day. If we're going to be innovating a sustainable future, we have to constantly be thinking about it. So this is not ending. This should go on. The future is forever with this one, particularly because in our evergreen vision, we want to make sure we're positioning ourselves for a long time future. We are fortunate that we don't have to take analyst calls quarterly and talk about how our earnings per quarter have been. Our goal is to continue to be, you know, on a positive trajectory every year and make progress. And we've done incredibly well with that. We're very proud of what we've been able to do. But our long term goal is to continue to remain in the sustainability space and make differences for others. So that's not going to go away. The question for us is, where do we have to be playing in order to live that vision? What are the spaces where people appreciate the work that we do and we feel like we have a right to help people? So that has to work into what we call our strategic platforms, the areas that we choose to invest in R&D and the invest the time of our teams. And for us, some of them, which I've mentioned already, and I'll throw in another one or two, circular economy packaging is a huge deal. Fibers and composites to lightweight automobiles or aerospace is a big deal because we believe that that's also a huge piece of sustainability, at least the lower emissions and, you know, so much more battery power and the like. Digital printing has been a great space for us. We're going to continue to stay in that space. We think that has a big play there. And one that I didn't mention before is the whole theme of agriculture, where we're doing work today, ingredients that go into the seed coatings to coat the outside of a seed so that there's higher efficiency in the planting mechanism and you're spraying less chemicals around because so much is encapsulated into the seed itself. So really fascinating, different space for us, but it's, again, same theme. Surface treatment that sticks to a surface and stops seeds from sticking together, so many other things, but a big area for us that we believe the world needs more of as there are more people in the world and we're looking to make food and food production and agriculture more sustainable. So a big piece there. We could layer on other things that we want to do moving forward, coatings in the metal industry where we know we can do bits for corrosion. That's about stopping things from degrading fast. And we want to extend our product line more into biomaterials, just reduce the reliance on petroleum-based materials. We already know we can make things that are highly recyclable and reusable, and we do have a number of biomaterials already that we use in some of our options. We look to do more of that. We're excited about that. We think that's a big space for us, and because we put things in water that don't want to be in water, we think we're in a good position to do that. So for us, the big picture is really being that sustainability enabler. So as we look out, it's that whole story again, Lee, of being able to help other people be successful with sustainability, help them overcome barriers and do the things that with great chemistry or great equipment combined with chemistry that they couldn't do ordinarily. We have to be part of the ecosystem. We're not doing it all by ourselves. It relies on so many others. And we've built teams and brought folks in that help us do that. So the goal, as we kind of complete this session and open it up, I guess, is, we got to think beyond our walls today and we have to challenge ourselves and where IRI comes in. The better we are at innovation, the better we are at innovation management and R&D management, the better we're going to be about creating solutions for folks that let sustainability really take hold and do so much more.
I love it. Thanks, Rick.
Sure.
All right. So we've had our first question has come in. It's from VJ Nagarajan from TCS. So he asks, is the circular economy the only dimension for answers to the ROI on sustainability practices? How would CFOs view the investments versus ROI?
I think it depends on, again, I'll come back to that theme. You mentioned CFO and we've got an awesome CFO. Jason's worked with us for many, many years now and he's he gives us feedback, right? So what I really want as we're running a business and, again, my role as CEO now, it's changed from, the wonder of science to how do I run a good business and keep people employed and do it within sustainability is the balance. So we're in a favorable position that in some cases we could give up a little to get a little, our profitability can be a little lower and we can grab onto a very positive raw material to make a difference in our world. But our goal is beyond that. The goal is to create, all the wins, keep employment going, use materials that make sense because we're affecting the efficiency appropriately and making great money in doing it. So I think, again, maybe not the perfect answer to a really good question. Our goal is to go for it all. And our statements talk about how we're going to win on people, planet, and profit. And we have to fight hard to win that every day. Not all the answers are obvious. And sometimes there are trade-offs in the midst of all this. There might be slightly lower profitability or even on a performance statement. Some of our comments to our customers or partners can be, look, you're not going to get everything you used to give, but you can get but you can get 90% of what you want or 95% of what you want, and you can do it in a sustainable manner. I bet you that still works for your business. And the key conversation is, a conversation with people in the industry about don't always fight against the incumbent, fight against what's needed for the industry to be successful. And I think you'll find that there's often a gap in there for which you can fit in your profitability, you can fit in your sustainability, and you can get a lot of this.
Mm. Okay. And yeah, the more long-term output. Right. So from Steve Perry at Eastman Chemical, hi Steve, how would you characterize where your customers and suppliers are in their journey to meet their sustainability objectives? Are they being proactive or reactive when regulatory changes drive their desire for new solutions or alternatives?
I'm gonna throw another component on that as well, which is the brands, right? So there are certain brands out there that have made big, and I can see it, Steve, I can see your head nodding, right? So, there's certain brands out there who have made big, bold statements, and these are awesome motivators. So if a brand's making a statement and their supplier wants to be a part of that, that's a great opportunity for the supplier to be part of it. And that's where, you know, Michaelman will enable these folks. If somebody who's in the packaging space and we can put something, a thin film OR material that lets them use a mono material or lets them use a paper-based substrate and a, whether it's a PepsiCo or a Nestle, they benefit. That's a huge win for everyone. So I think there are folks out there like that, that are ready to go. The challenge has been that some of the brands were, you know, the cart was before the horse. They got too excited too soon. And the technology wasn't ready. And I think now we're catching up rapidly. So many of these spaces are ready to be there. But I do believe it also is industry dependent. And you know, for many years, the paper industry had been very comfortable with the things that they'd been doing. They'd stuck with it. And I think it put them in a little bit of a slower space. But now, you know, through the wonders of science and how things have changed, I think that there are opportunities for the paper industry to take big steps forward, and they're doing that. And you know, so different industries will be in different places. There are those who are still not going to move until the regulations make them move. They're just not going to do it. And there's still plenty of industries out there that rely on solvent-based chemistry, you know, things that can evaporate into the air and, you know, create carbon emissions. And, you know, there's just not enough regulation out there to force it yet. And I think it'll also vary around the world. I was surprised to know that some of our biggest wins are in China and India, even though Europe is the biggest maker of change. But I think there's more speed, interestingly, in China and India. And sometimes, based on the globality of the world, products that are made in China, no surprise, get imported into Europe. And so change will occur in Europe, but the manufacturing change to make the difference that occurred in another part of the world. Really fascinating. But I think, Steve, the answer is different people are moving at different paces. And our best efforts are with those that we can either, who are already ahead, or those that are willing to make change and make some level of sacrifice in order to make that change happen faster.
Awesome. So we've got three questions and I haven't been able to decide between the three of them. So we're going to do lightning round. The first one is from Kiki Chen and they are with Techner Apex. So can you elaborate on the aspect of educating customers to drive sustainability? As a B2B materials provider, it usually is difficult to get to end users who ultimately can dictate what functions that people want for particular applications and how much people would like to pay for the products.
Yeah, well, so I'll start a little bit, start with the end in mind, right? You know, anytime you can get to the end user and figure that out and then come back to your partner, customer and say, hey, look, I think we can do this together. I think there is a win-win there. And again, I might not be answering the question 100% to the expectation you might have, but I do believe, and this gets back to our model of customer intimacy. While we have intellectual property we want to protect, and often our customers don't want folks to know that Michaelman's the magic behind what they're doing, there are advantages to bringing people together. And I think we do our best work when there's, confidentiality is respected and dialogue is open. So as we've gone through, many companies have gone through raw material supply issues in our field over the last year, very, very common over the last, you know, 18 months-ish. A little transparency goes a long way, but opening up the conversation about what you're playing for, maybe not the materials matters. So in conversations we're having with folks now, whether it's about sustainability or supply, think about the breadth of the conversation you can have by opening up, talking about, you know, what are the needs of the material that we're making? What is that formulated into? How's that applied to a surface? And then what's the end use? If you can put all four of those together and have a conversation about that, solution and innovation happens a lot faster. And in IRI, I know we talk a lot about the front end of innovation. You know, there's lots of conversation about that. This is all about the front end of innovation. And if you want it to occur and you want it to be sustainable, you write all of that into your initial conversation. So like, I can't tell you that I answered the question right and I overdid my lightning round capabilities. So I'll stop there, but I hope that helps.
That's fine. So, all right. Next one is from Steve Moskowitz with Integris. So you spoke a little about working in other countries, regions, et cetera. How are the geopolitical challenges impacting your sustainability goals? And how are you seeing different approaches to sustainability depending on where your facilities and or customers are located?
So I don't know if anybody follows Edelman. And, you know, Edelman's a company that does a lot of public relations and they have a trust survey that we've come to enjoy and like. And you know, where the world is today is that, you know, people will say my company is amongst the, you know, and my leader are, my leader is someone that I trust. So I think there's trust within a level of trust within industry today. I give you that as a sole example. I think there's more trust within companies and business right now and between business than there is between others in government. And Edelman, I think Edelman's data generally backs that up, right? So when companies are working for a common good and a common purpose, I think you get that advantage. So some of the work that we did early on in India was first manifested in the United States. We figured it out here. That moved into the India marketplace, and that was incredibly successful for them. I gave you the example of, from a few minutes ago where, the innovation work was done at Michelman sites all around the world, how to make a coating for a cup that was fully recyclable, that would make the cup water resistant. You can heat seal and make a, paper cup. And the initial commercialization for that occurred within China, and those cups are then shipped around the world. So I think, to some level, to answer this question, the power of business to move things cross-continent couldn't be more powerful than the geopolitical implications. And so then, what's that leave you with? Okay, if any countries are in the midst of struggle, walls get built up quickly, right? Speaking freely about, what's going on in Ukraine, this is not good. This is having a terrible impact on, the Ukrainian citizens, as well as the rest of Europe, and it's having a ripple effect on all of us. This is not a good situation, and that does have an impact on business, particularly when you think about energy and energy utilization. And it's a terrible mess that I all hope we can work through. I prefer to think of situations where the world's working together to solve big problems. And I think when it comes to sustainability, that's something that I root for every day, and I hope that many of us on this call, who aren't just chemical, but so many other things, can make a difference there, because they're bringing people together to solve big, real world problems.
Mm. Yes. Oh, and that would be a wonderful place to end, but I just wanted to do one last question. And this one, I'm still getting smart on sustainability, so I'm hoping that this will help. So Steve McManus from RTI asked, to what extent is Michelman tracking its scope 3 GHG emissions?
We are on the journey, and we're right now kind of diving in deeper to make sure we're picking the right tools, and we're comparing a couple tools against each other, and we're using third parties for that. So we could go create our own metrics ourselves. We're a mid-sized company. We don't necessarily have the skills to do that, so we're relying on third parties. So we're not all the way there yet, admittedly, but we're at the phase where we know and we can list out what we do, and we can begin looking further out, which is what's required for the phase, three phase parts. And we're beginning to capture that information. And again, our goal now is to make sure that whatever information we provide to others or we use for our own calculations is going to be reliable. So once we've picked our system, I guess this is what I'd recommend for anybody, find a system that makes sense, that is useful within the infrastructure in which you serve, because not only will we need this information for ourselves, but others will ask for it, and it has to be in a format that's reliable and consistent for them. And, I went to a lecture many years ago that was on packaging, and it was a wonderful session, and we began to talk about greenhouse gas emissions, and, a conversation came up about, packaging for butter, and, the hand waving to make this go away was, the cows produce more gas and greenhouse gas emission in their production of butter than the package itself does. So, a cute story. We haven't solved the problem about the package, but you just got to make sure what you know what you include in scope and what you keep out of scope when you're doing these calculations. And if we can standardize, and for at least for Michelman, we can use a tool that's instructive, we'll get there. And for us, this is a combination of using our R&D team and our regulatory team together as partners to look at this, pick the space that works for us, and begin to work this into our everyday language is where we've got to go. So many companies can do the ones and twos okay. The threes are harder, and that's what we're trying to bring all together.
All right, Ed, that was wonderful, Rick. Thank you so much. This has been—I've learned so much already. Thank you so much for being willing to share your journey with me and with all the folks here. We really appreciate it. So thank you so much. And thanks to everyone who came and asked questions and made the conversation richer. I really appreciate everyone here. So thanks so much.
Thanks, Lee.
Thanks. And everyone have a great day. Thanks so much.